evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Neha Yadavali, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, Mega Shabbat, open mics, Valentine's Day, the Super Bowl, and love poems. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Last Friday evening, students and community members gathered in Ryan Fieldhouse for Northwestern's annual Mega Shabbat. WNUR News' Rachel Spears took us behind the scenes for the preparation process for the event.
Mega Shabbat Shalom!
On Friday afternoon, preparations were underway. Caterers were counting chairs, laying loaves of challah on every table, and putting finishing touches on what would be hundreds of plates of food. Students buzzed around them, putting fairy lights in jars for the more than 40 tables and laying out signs explaining Shabbat dinner, a weekly dinner within the Jewish faith. The ritual dinner happens every week on Friday night, but at Northwestern last Friday night, it was special. Mega Shabbat, hosted by Northwestern Hillel and Chabad, as well as Olami Evanston, is the biggest campus Shabbat of the year. Preparations started in the fall, though Weinberg senior Haley Shama says dishes are relatively straightforward.
So for the most part, it's very traditional staple foods, like chicken and potatoes is not anything revolutionary, but just kind of what's the norm for Shabbat dinners.
The broccolini, chicken piccata, and mashed potatoes made for a delicious menu. But Mega Shabbat is about more than just the food.
So Shabbat is the Jewish Sabbath, which takes place from sundown Friday until sundown Saturday every week. So in a way, it's like a little mini holiday that we have every single week.
That was Michael Simon, the executive director of Northwestern Hillel. He added that some Jewish people refrain from using technologies like cars during Shabbat. As a college student, Shama says Shabbat carries a slightly different meaning.
And in kind of a modern framework, it's a really good time to kind of reset and regroup from the week that just happened, to come together as a community, enjoy a delicious meal, and prepare for the week ahead.
She was the head of experience for the Mega Shabbat planning team. That's all of the logistics and ritual elements. She flew all the way from Minneapolis, where she's living this quarter, for this event because of what it means to her. Weinberg senior Sophie Perel was the head of the Mega Shabbat planning team. She says she has carried Shabbat with her into her college life.
One thing about me is, like, back at home every Friday, like, I wasn't allowed to have plans until after dinner because Shabbat dinner was
me too
very important and, like, on the calendar every Friday unless, like, there's some dire emergency. So for me, it's like, this is what I do every weekend. Like, let me bring you into it.
The ritual, made mega this week, can remind students of home and share the Jewish faith. In 2023, the dinner moved from the Norris University Center to Ryan Fieldhouse. Since then, the event has grown. The larger space means more students and community members can come. Many find out about the dinner through word of mouth or through friends like Perel, who invited all 8 of her roommates. Evan Weitzman was the Mega Shabbat head of outreach. The McCormick and School of Communication junior says the team worked hard to recruit attendees.
But then as winter break approached, that's when we really started with recruitment. So for me, that meant a lot of recruiting table captains. That's kind of our strat, if you will, in that we recruit table captains, and then we have table captains invite 11 people to join them at their table. And that's how we fill up that huge space.
Diners came from many religious backgrounds, and not everyone was a student. Since it began 14 years ago, Mega Shabbat's attendance has steadily grown.
2 years ago, we had a little under 500 people, I think. Last year, we were around 500, and I said, can we try for 600? And my understanding is there are well over 600 people who are registered.
Weitzman, Shama, and Perel told me that they were expecting somewhere between 650 and 700 people this year. The planning team hoped that everyone who attended would walk away with open minds. They also hoped a diverse community of people united at the Shabbat dinner table could find common ground in this practice.
It's really just about opening Shabbat and like sharing Shabbat with everyone, Jews, non-Jews, staff, students, everyone like alike. We want you guys and like the general Northwestern community to experience what we experience every week.
Perel went on to tell me about one of her goals for Mega Shabbat 2026.
A big theme for me this year is like come as you are. Like we want everyone is welcome, and that means everyone regardless of everything Haley mentioned, and also regardless of like religion and regardless of race and age and everything that like quote unquote like divides us or makes us different from each other. Like that doesn't matter. Like you're always welcome. You always have a seat at the table.
Shama echoed this openness, especially in what she identified as a tense political environment rife with societal divisions.
So I think that Mega Shabbat is a really unique event in that it is a time where there are Jewish and non-Jewish students and everyone in between who have all sorts of different political and geopolitical opinions. And it doesn't matter because we are all just focusing on having a wonderful Shabbat meal, and it's a time to share culture in a way that is not divisive, it's not polarizing.
I left at around 4:50 p.m., just as the sun was setting and Shabbat officially began. The fieldhouse was still relatively quiet and most attendees wouldn't be arriving for another hour, but the tables were set for food and good conversation. Rachel Spears, WNUR News.
Women in Music and Night School hosted their second open mic this Thursday, which featured a variety of student performances. Sahana Ani has the story.
When the night has come, and the land is gone.
With the microphone adorned with pink and red hearts in the Sigma Alpha Iota basement, performers sing covers and originals while their friends accompany them on various instruments at an open mic night hosted by the Northwestern Chapter of Women in Music and Night School on Thursday. As LED lights cast the room purple, those in the audience decorate paper valentines and drink hot chocolate while listening to performances. Vice President of Women in Music, Cameron Crawford, says events like this support female musicians.
We thought an open mic night would be a cute, intimate thing to put on to connect members of the music community, music enjoyers, musicians. We like these kinds of events because it is in itself a social as well, and so people can meet each other over common interests.
While Crawford was at first not planning on performing,
I was going to, but I lost my voice this morning. Like, I don't think I can sing. So, I don't want to embarrass myself, so I'm just not going to. But I was planning on it.
She changed her mind later in the night, despite her nerves.
My leg was shaking so bad. But other than that, I kind of blacked out. So... I write a lot of songs, but I don't typically perform them in front of people. They usually get performed in the band by the vocalist in my band, who has a great voice. So, I was definitely nervous, but the positive feedback was nice to hear.
Junior Talia Adlin Perlman is a singer, songwriter, and pianist who performs under the name Talia Pearl.
Hi, my name is Talia Pearl, and I'll be singing a few of my original songs for you guys.
She says she is always looking for performance opportunities at Northwestern, and cherishes open mic nights like this one.
I love performing. I think there's something so special about sharing my work with other people. My goal in songwriting is to, I think for me, music always makes me feel something, and I think there's something so special in being able to elicit a feeling in somebody else. So when I perform, I'm able to hopefully connect with others and make them feel something more powerful, and that's something really special to me.
Although the event was hosted by Women in Music, anyone could perform. Seniors Jade Garcia, Sid Chalasani, and Justin Price played two songs together. While the three are in a larger band together, Garcia, the vocalist, says this was their first time performing as a trio.
This one might be interesting, guys. Okay.
We just learned this at like an hour ago.
Yeah.
I was definitely really nervous coming into it, but I feel like it was way less intimidating getting up there than I expected, honestly, and especially because there's so many people I know in the crowd.
Women in Music is planning on holding more open mics in the future.
They've just fostered a really safe environment, I feel like, to kind of experiment and play what we want to play.
For WNUR News, Sahana Ani.
With Valentine's Day coming up, grocery stores are stocking their shelves with all kinds of bouquets. Supriya Akella has a story on where these bouquets come from and why they might not be the wisest choice for your Valentine or for the planet.
The city of Chicago's motto is Urbs in Horto, Latin for city in a garden.
The roots of Chicago's floral industry run deep in its frigid soil. Conveniently positioned as a railroad hub in the middle of the U.S., the city was once a major supplier for roses and carnations across the country. Today, Chicago's floral footprint is much smaller, with most commercial flowers imported from overseas. With Valentine's Day right around the corner, there seems no better time to think about where our flowers come from. According to the USDA, the U.S. imported cut flowers, plants, and nursery stock products worth $3.3 billion from 81 countries in 2022. But the environmental cost of importing flowers is far greater than the economic cost. According to the International Council on Clean Transportation, Valentine's Day flowers imported from Colombia to the U.S. in 2018 produced 360,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Some businesses are working to offer greater access to locally grown native Chicago flowers. Chicago native Cornelia McNamara is the owner and creative director of Cornelia McNamara Flowers. She runs an urban farm, Chicago Farm Flowers, where she grows flowers for sale locally. McNamara says waste is a major issue for the industry.
If I had to guess, at least 15% of the flowers, if not 30% or even more of the flowers that like come into Chicago alone, end up just rotting before they're sold.
McNamara was inspired to enter the industry after watching her mom work at Green Ink, a flower store that has been serving Chicago since 1973. She started in New York City, shopping at wholesale flower markets, selling some of the highest quality flowers in the world. Moving to Chicago was an adjustment that inspired the farm.
Chicago is historically known to be a dumping ground for the worst grade flowers in the States. I was like, I can't stand these terrible flowers anymore. I just want to start growing my own flowers. Like, we need fresher, more beautiful flowers. And there was one flower that was the turning point. It's called the Café au Lait Dahlia. Every bride wanted them. We called them CALs/life ruiners. They're so fragile. And you would order them from California and they're like $8 a stem and you get five in a bunch and they just melt. Like there's no way. They're so fragile. They're like sparkly whipped frosting. Like you can't put them in a box and ship them. So that was kind of where we started. We're like, okay, we have to start growing dahlias.
For McNamara, the artistry of flowers is central to her work. The choice to not import can pose its own challenges.
If beauty is the aim and we want peonies and giant garden roses in winter, I think, yes, we still do need to import some of them, or we need to invest in infrastructure. Somebody needs to be interested in greenhouse technology and growing stuff locally. I think we do still need to import some stuff, but I think that like anything, like we could just temper it down a little bit and that would be a great answer for the environment.
But even then, there's no substitute for a flower grown locally.
The energy that a flower in its season gives you is unbelievable. And these flowers last so much longer than grocery store flowers. Everyone wants me to teach them how to take care of grocery store flowers better. And that is a skill and I know how to do it. But the thing is, they're just so dead and they're shellacked in pesticides.
Growing native flowers also has immense benefits for the environment and local ecology. According to an article from the Chicago Botanic Gardens, native plants were the cornerstone in a sustainable web of life. By growing native plants, we support the native birds, insects, and microorganisms that evolved with them, protecting biodiversity and wildlife in the area. McNamara has seen this firsthand.
I'm trying to plant more and more because the more native birds that we can attract, the better the insect control is, like for pests.
McNamara believes local flower farming can and should be adopted on a larger scale.
We're educating people, we're inspiring people, we're creating habitat, and it really takes a lot of pressure off of the storm drains and everything because flooding is mitigated. It also creates it mitigates the heat island effect. Sometimes I'll pull up to the farm and I can just smell like all the oxygen that's like coming off of it. We have all these vacant lots. So many people want to do this work. All we need is some real serious tax incentives and some real serious like funding and education.
According to the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee, Chicago is home to many beautiful plant species. Wild bergamot, sky blue aster, coneflowers, root anemones, wild roses, and more. While these may not be the traditional Valentine's bouquet of red roses, McNamara says local farmers offer some great alternatives.
I would say to go with like flowering plants and locally grown tulips, because they don't have any pesticides. They're going to last longer. They're better for the environment, and they have a lot more life and romance than a dozen roses with like stiff foliage.
So see if you can buy some local flowers this Valentine's Day. They'll make your Valentine and the earth happier. For WNUR News, I'm Sapria Kella.
The Super Bowl has taken over pop culture with its night filled with music stars and athleticism. Olivia Payne has the story in this week's B-List.
Welcome to the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess and pop culture. This week, Super Bowl 60, Bad Bunny's halftime, and Star Wars. Super Bowl 60 took place last night, with the Seattle Seahawks defeating the New England Patriots 29-13. Running back Kenneth Walker III was named MVP. Bad Bunny brought Puerto Rican history, messages of unity, and even a real wedding to his halftime performance. The 13-minute show featured guest performers Lady Gaga and Ricky Martin, and other celebrities such as Cardi B and Pedro Pascal made brief appearances. The show ended with Bad Bunny saying, "God bless America," and listing every country in the Americas as a billboard behind him read, "The only thing more powerful than hate is love." The first teaser for The Mandalorian and Grogu aired during the first quarter of the Super Bowl, giving Star Wars fans a brief taste of the upcoming film. It's set to release in May this year, making it the first Star Wars movie since the franchise's third film trilogy ended in 2019. The Super Bowl stands were star-studded as usual. Celebrities like Adam Sandler, Leonardo DiCaprio, Justin Haley Bieber, Jay-Z, and Blue Ivy Carter were shown in Santa Clara watching the game. F1 driver Lewis Hamilton and Kim Kardashian made their first public appearance as a couple as they were spotted in a suite. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Olivia Payne.
On this week's segment of Well-Versed, Evelyn Wan reads poems on love.
Welcome to Well-Versed, WNUR News' poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. February is known as the month of love, and with Valentine's Day on Saturday, tonight's selections explore the many forms of love. Edward Estlin Cummings, commonly known as E.E. Cummings, was one of the most widely read American poets of the 20th century. He was an experimental poet and oftentimes strayed from traditional grammatical conventions. His work explored themes of nature and love, like the following poem. This is Love is More Thicker Than Forget by E.E. Cummings. Love is more thicker than forget, more thinner than recall, more seldom than a wave is wet, more frequent than to fail. It is most mad and moonly, and less it shall unbe, than all the sea which only is deeper than the sea. Love is less always than to win, less never than alive, less bigger than the least begin, less littler than forgive. It is most sane and sunly, and more it cannot die, than all the sky which only is higher than the sky. The second poem is from Ogden Nash, an American poet known for his light-hearted, witty, and punchy poems. They often have a playfulness to them, which is one of the reasons I chose the next poem you will hear. This is To My Valentine by Ogden Nash. More than a catbird hates a cat, or a criminal hates a clue, or the Axis hates the United States, that's how much I love you. I love you more than a duck can swim, and more than a grapefruit squirts. I love you more than a gin rummy is a bore, and more than a toothache hurts. As a shipwrecked sailor hates the sea, or a juggler hates a shove, as a hostess detests unexpected guests, that's how much you I love. I love you more than a wasp can sting, and more than the subway jerks. I love you as much as a beggar needs a crutch,
and more than a hangnail irks. I swear to you by the stars above, and below, if there such be, as the high court lows perjurious oaths, that's how you're loved by me. Thank you for listening to this week's poetry segment. Remember to spread love to those you love. For WNUR News, I'm Evelyn Wan.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Tomorrow will be slightly colder than today with a high of 33 and a low of 29 and cloudy. Friday will be sunny with a high of 43, taking us into a weekend with warmer temperatures into the lower 40s. Cloudier days are coming up as well. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe, earlier today, Carlos Mendez, assistant principal at Washington Elementary in Evanston, has been jailed on felony charges of aggravated criminal sexual abuse of a minor along with domestic battery. District 65 says the allegations do not involve students, and he's scheduled to appear in Cook County Court on February 26th. The Langham, Chicago, has been named the top hotel in Chicago and Illinois and the third best hotel in the country in U.S. News and World Report's 2026 rankings. Three other Chicago hotels also landed in the national top 50. The Trump administration has removed a large rainbow pride flag from the Stonewall National Monument in New York, citing new National Park Service rules that limit which flags can fly on federal property. The move has sparked outrage from LGBTQ+ activists and New York leaders. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Rachel Spears, Sahana Ani, Supriya Akella, Evelyn Wan, and Olivia Payne. I'm Nate Hayatavali. Catch our next newscast Friday, February 13th. Now back to scheduled programming.